no widow or widower looks exactly the same, and no widowhood looks exactly the same either. Therefore, no healing journey or timeline is an identical experience. The word loss contains only four letters, but its size belies the amount of fear it produces at even its mere mention. Even more terrifying and enormous is the reality of loss, and specifically the loss of a spouse. Widowhood has the capacity to keep those affected from moving forward in a new and fulfilling life. The loss of a spouse is frightening. The call for relatable and actionable direction and advice remains a very, very real need in the widowed community. And that is just what our guest today will give us in her book, Loss is a Four-Letter Word. Award-winning author Carol Brody Fleet experienced the pain and grief herself as a young widow and mother, leaving her and her 9-year-old daughter alone. She combines the no-nonsense direct advice with specific boot camp-style assignments that are framed with compassion and humor to help those through a most challenging journey. Carol is an award-winning author of When Bad Things Happen to Good Women, Happily Even After, and Widows Wear Stilettos. Widely recognized as America's go-to expert on life adversity and grief recovery, she is also a three-time contributor to the iconic Chicken Soup for the Soul book series, and as well a regular contributor to the Huffington Post and to TryAge.com. She's also a popular motivational speaker, and her message generally is what now and what next. And it's our pleasure to have Carol on the show today. And how are you doing, Carol?
I'm doing great. It is so fantastic to be with you today.
Okay. Your book cover is pretty cute. Shows a young woman with a long thing around her neck and baggage going out of a sports car. Is that what we're trying to do here, is to create a new lifestyle after loss?
Well, first of all, the book cover is all credit to the wonderful talents of my publisher. I wish I could claim that, but unfortunately, artistic creativity is not one of my strong suits, so that is 100% them. But they did encapsulate the vision, and what I did not want to convey is sorrow or sadness, because we have enough of that. And I wanted to grab the reader from the moment they looked at the book, both with artistically and with the title. And the message, whether implicit or explicit, is yes, it hurts. Grief hurts. Loss hurts. But it doesn't have to be this way forever. It doesn't have to be a state of permanence. And the cover and the title is kind of my way of conveying that, is grabbing the reader's attention and saying, hey, over here, we're going to help you figure this out.
Well, Carol, so that our listeners can be more personally involved with you, how about telling them your story?
Of course. By education and degree, I come from the legal profession. I'm a certified paralegal. I specialized in personal injury and medical malpractice and wrongful death. My husband, Mike, was a 28-year veteran of his police department here in Southern California, and we were just really a very average couple working hard and playing hard and raising our daughter, Kendall. And in 1998, I'd left the legal profession, actually, moved into the upper management sector of the beauty industry. And my husband was on the cusp of retiring from the police department and looking forward to his second chapter when he was diagnosed with ALS, which is more commonly known as Lou Gehrig's disease. This is not a disease from which you recover. It is not a disease from which you get better, unfortunately. There has happily been far more awareness brought to the illness in the last couple of years with the Ice Bucket Challenge, and they're making great strides. But the reality, our reality at that time, was that the diagnosis was that of a terminal illness. And Mike battled his illness with courage and dignity, more than I could imagine having to muster. And his battle ended on December 19th, 2000. And that left me a widow with a then 11-year-old daughter in emotional and financial ruin and absolutely no idea how I was going to get through in any respect. There was absolutely no sense of direction. There was nobody to whom I could directly relate. And I couldn't find a great deal of support that spoke to me in the ways that I needed to be spoken to.
So how did you research this problem? Did you find a mentor, find a book?
I'm a people person, so I immediately, the first thing I did was look for support groups. And at that time, first of all, you know, everybody says, well, the Internet, and which is a fantastic tool today. But when I became widowed, the Internet really was in its infancy. You know, you had chat rooms, and you had porn, and, well, that's it. And I didn't really have a big use for either one of those things. So it wasn't the source of support and education and suggestion and resources that we know it to be today. And the only support groups that I could find were people who were chronologically much older and in a far different place than I was. Their children were grown and gone. They were grandparents. They were married for decades. And to me, the worst part was the general attitude was, well, I'm just waiting till it's my turn to go. And I thought, I can't model that for my daughter, and I certainly can't buy into that attitude for myself. I just can't be that. So I was pretty much left to my own devices. I had fantastic support from my family and from my inner circle, if you will. But as supportive and as wonderful as they were then and are now, nobody could look at me in the eye and say, yeah, I get it. I've been there. And that's one of the most important things to this day, I feel, helps the bereaved, is finding that particular community that can say, yeah, I get it. I've been there. Because that right there buoys you. That right there is a comfort in knowing that you're not alone. And as I discovered a few years after I became widowed, if you can't find something, create it. And that's what I set out to do.
And how did you find the tools necessary that you have in your book?
Well, a lot of what is in the books is personal experience, and I could have titled the books one of two things: "This worked really well for me, give it a try," or "Don't let this happen to you," because I made mistakes. Heck, I still make mistakes when it comes to this journey, but. What I did was, it was about 5 years after I lost Mike, and I felt that both Kendall and I had made a really good recovery. I had been through the legal and financial and emotional transitions. I had begun dating again. I had changed homes. My career was once again blossoming. So I felt that I had moved through the crux of grief in a healthy and productive way. And I just started jotting notes down one night of all the things that I've been looking for when I was a new widow and I couldn't find. How do I help my child when I can't even get out of my own pajamas? How do I make those legal and financial transitions? Because that's not fun, and you really, really don't know where to begin. You don't know what's the most important thing to do and what can wait. You have no sense of priority at all. How do I deal with the people around me who are saying things that aren't necessarily supportive or even positive? Can I think about dating again, or is this it for me? You know, what's appropriate in this new world that I have been thrown into and I don't know how to navigate? When I finished making all these handwritten notes, because I'm old school, I actually had what turned into the table of contents of the first book, because that's what my goal was there, was to take them through the chronology of widowhood and address all the things that I couldn't find, and answer a lot of the questions that weren't getting answered for me. So that's where it all began.
So mainly what's in this new book is your personal experience and how it helps a widow or widower.
A lot of it is personal experience, but because this is the fourth book, there's also a lot of great input and anecdotes from the widowed community. So that's a fantastic part of all the subsequent books, really, is that I've got just a community of hundreds of thousands of people that have shared their experiences and what worked for them and what hasn't worked for them. And it's a really cohesive effort now on the part of the community. The boot camp concept comes from the lack of proactivity that I have seen on a lot of people's part. You know, I'm sure you've heard the cliche, time heals all wounds. And the problem with that cliche is it's not true. But too many people buy into that if enough time passes, I'm just going to feel better. Well, that's not the case. If you just simply wait around and watching time pass, all you are going to accomplish is a whole bunch of waiting. The one thing, the most important thing that you can be on a healing journey, no matter what it is or who it is that you have lost, is proactive. You've got to take charge of the situation. We can't control life and death. Most lost circumstances are not within our control, but we can control our reactions to it. And we can couch and inform and design and build our healing journeys the way that we see fit. And that takes proactivity. Now, when I say the word proactivity to somebody who is in the mires of grief, it's very overwhelming. And that can create a shutdown. Proactivity just means doing one teeny tiny thing every single day that will take you one step forward toward peace and calm and the restoration of routine in your life. And that's where the boot camp comes in. It's kind of kicky, and it's kind of uplifting, and it's kind of cutesy. But at the heart of it, what it's saying is, you've got control of this, and I'm taking off the gloves. You have enough people patting you on the head saying, oh, poor baby. Yes, I feel for your loss because I've done it. I've done it, and I know what it is. Not I know how you feel. I know what it is. And I'm going to take you through it. I'm going to grab you by the hand and say, okay, here's what you can do today. Here's what you can do tomorrow. Here's what you can do 6 months from now. And then push people, if I have to, in the direction that they need to face to get to the place that they want to be. And that's a place of peace, pure and simple.
You said time heals all wounds, and then you said, but that's not true.
Right.
But I'm thinking death heals all wounds, but you don't want to wait till you die to be through the loss situation and to be alive and fully functioning again.
I would have to agree with that. When I hear that, it kind of takes me back to that place where, well, I'm just waiting till it's my time to go. Well, look at what you're missing while you're waiting to leave. You know, I don't want to leave. I want to live. And whatever this life has to hand me, and in the time that I was widowed, it's handed me a lot. I wouldn't want to miss out on any of that. I don't want to wait around to leave, because that time's going to come. It's going to come for everybody. Well, I'm not waiting for it. I'm going to live.
How old were you when you were widowed?
I was 40 years old.
40.
When I was widowed. And in the grand scheme of things, that is still considered young.
Yeah.
I was humbled very quickly when I began to Widows Wear Stilettos and growing a community, and I was meeting 17 and 18 and 20-year-old widows, by and large military widows. And I thought, wow, I'm not the youngest widow on the planet. It just felt like that at that moment in time. But I was 40 years old.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm delighted to be in service to widows and widowers of all ages, from all walks, from all sets of circumstances. I speak across the board to anybody who has lost the person to whom they committed spending the rest of their lives.
Yeah. Carol, this is a content-rich program, and so what I would like to do now is to have you comment on your bereavement boot camp lessons, mm-hmm. and I will tell you the 8 lessons, and you give our listeners your best tip or explanation or whatever on each of them, okay?
Okay.
Your first lesson is, I'm still here.
That's correct. That lesson is probably one of the most important, really. As I said through my initial experiences, too many widowed believe that their lives end when their spouse's lives ended. And the first lesson is saying, no, it didn't. You're still here. And here's all the ways that I need to point that out to you.
Okay. Lesson 2 is, my healing journey is mine.
Yes. That means it's yours. It belongs to no one else. And that means that nobody else gets to judge or opine negatively or do anything other than support the healing journey that you are designing. And you don't design it in one day. So what it is teaching ownership of the healing journey to the person that needs to heal.
What do you think about people that say, oh, I'm so sorry, I know how you feel, and they've not been widowed?
I know how you feel does not help anybody in any set of circumstances. Here's why. If I say, oh, when... I'm so sorry, I know how you feel. Because when I lost my husband, my job, my home, my pet, my what have you, and now all of a sudden it's my tale of woe, and you, the person who has sought comfort by sharing terrible news with me, is now in the position of consoling me. We need to leave the spotlight where it belongs, and that's on the person who needs consoling in the moment. So I know how you feel is something that I'm committed to eradicating.
Okay. Lesson 3, stop putting off proactivity.
And that's what we just spoke about, is quit waiting around. Quit waiting for time to heal all wounds. Quit waiting for the estate to resolve. Quit waiting for other people's approval. Quit waiting to feel better. Help yourself feel better.
Lesson 4 is, I turn to who?
That is asking the reader, who are you allowing to influence you? You know, it's a well-known fact that we become like the 5 people we spend the most time with. Who are you spending your healing journey with? Who are you allowing to influence and couch and have a say in your healing journey? Who is reinforcing you? And who is really bringing you down and keeping you there? Who are your energy givers and who are your energy drainers? How do we differentiate between the two? And how do we shift your focus to turning to the right people?
Okay. The next one is lesson 5.
You can edit that one if you need to.
Please put your bleep on your back.
Okay. The title of that chapter comes from a very well-known quote said by the incomparable Cher. And she was getting a very, very hard time when she was discussing having undergone plastic surgery, which she was very forthcoming about. And she finally said, you know, it doesn't matter if I take a certain body part and put them on my back. It's my business. It's nobody else's business but my own. And I thought, why can't we adopt that attitude to our healing journeys? And now, by this point in the book, the reader is hopefully getting an undercurrent, a theme, that, oh yeah, this is my life. This is my healing journey. And as long as I'm not coping destructively and I'm not hurting anybody else, you know, I can put it on my back. This is about me and my healing and my vision. It's not about what anybody else has to say.
Well, that's true. Lesson 6 is get up, get moving, get out.
Yes. You know, it doesn't matter if you live in a teeny tiny apartment or in a great big mansion. Your four walls can close in on you very quickly, and without even realizing it, this is the thing that I found, without even realizing it, you have closed off your world, you've insulated yourself. Part of that is a defense mechanism against loss, but at a point in time, you've got to move, you've got to get out, you've got to expand your walls again, and that means you know, when I say get moving and get out, people have visions of, you know, running to the gym 10 times a week. That's not true. But doing something to just alter your vision line, alter your horizon just a little bit, whether it is taking a quiet meal with a close friend, whether it is going back to your house of worship or your fellowship, however you perceive that to be, whether it is just taking a walk around your neighborhood, do something to alter your immediate horizon. Because it really doesn't matter where you live or how you live. If you aren't doing something to get back out, breathe in some fresh air, take in some nature. Nature is an incredible healer, no matter where you live. Nature is a phenomenal healer. Just to do something for just a few minutes. It doesn't have to be for hours. It doesn't have to be long distance. Don't get overwhelmed. But just that little tiny bit will help to shape your attitude. It will help give you a more positive outlook when you open your eyes in the morning.
Do you have any thoughts on what someone told me about going through this bereavement process, which was that being near or in the water helped them a lot?
Well, I'm going to jump all over that. I'm born and raised in Southern California. I live in Southern California. Water is, I think it's kind of like in the state bylaws, I think. It's just part of your life. And I live about 20 minutes from the beach. And to this day, just the smell of the ocean is a psychological calm for me. It is nature's tranquilizer for me. If I'm on water, underwater, in water, near water, looking at water, I am happy. My shoulders drop and relax. I breathe slower. I think it is the sound of rain, which is a sound that we in Southern Cal don't get to hear a lot, but that is a very calming influence. And I'm speaking personally now. I can't dictate for the world. But I absolutely ascribe to that belief system. Absolutely.
Well, we're going to come back to a point here in Lesson 6 after we finish. But let's go on to Lesson 7. It's your turn.
It's your turn means pay attention to yourself. And ladies, I'm going to talk to you because this is a tough thing for us. A lot of us have children. Many of us have jobs. Many of us have both. And in the pursuit of raising children and, if applicable, helping children through their grief and getting jobs done and the household needs running and the activities need handling and the groceries need buying and all, we forget about ourselves. And when we do pay attention to ourselves, we feel guilty for it. So it's a lose-lose situation. It is your turn. It is time to pay attention to you. It is time to fill yourself with what fills you. Whether that is a hobby that you have had to put to one side, or a career change that you've always wanted to make, or you want to change homes, or you want to, whatever it is that you have it in your heart to do, even if that means 20 minutes in the bathtub with no distractions, don't take your phones in the bathroom. I never understood that. There is nothing that's happening on your phone that is so important that it needs to go into the bathroom with you. It's time to pay attention to you. Without attention to yourself, to your physical health, to your emotional health, to your spiritual health, to your psychological health, there can be no recovery. And you cannot be the most effective parent, the most effective employee, the most effective child if your parents are still with you, the most effective sibling or friend, or whatever it is you strive to be on a daily basis, without proper self-care.
And finally, Lesson 8, past, present, and future, you can have all three.
Most important chapter, because, again, many, many widowed feel like life is an either-or proposition. You have two choices. You either live in a past that is no longer yours to have because, well, your life did not end with your spouse's. That life, that chapter, has come to its finish. So you can stay there, and you can stay in mourning for a life that you cannot reclaim, or you are supposed to move forward and forget all about that life and everything that that was about. And people would call it closure, and that's it. And you have to choose. And that's not true. One of my favorite mantras, it's one of my favorite things that I've ever written, actually, is you can treasure your past. You can love your past. You can, and you certainly should, honor your past. You do not have to live in your past. You bring your past forward with you in the form of memories and warmth, and look at what we had and what we built, and you bring all of that forward with you into the life that you're learning to love. You know, there are all kinds of ways that we keep Mike's legacies alive and well, and we smile and we revel in all of that while we have moved forward into our new lives. Our daughter Kendall was 11 when her daddy passed away. She's now 29 years old with a new love and a life of her own. I have changed careers. I've changed homes. In 2009, I remarried to a wonderful man who rolled up his sleeves and joins in working in the widow community with me. Nope, he's not a widower, but when we met, he immediately saw what I was trying to do and said, I'm in this with you. This is great. And he's been a tremendous asset in that respect. And he is the love of this life. Mike was the love of that life. Do you see what I'm saying? You can have your past. You can have today, and you can have the future that you design and that you couch any way that you choose it. Whether you choose to remain on your own and loving it, because a lot of widows do, and that's great. Or if you choose to embrace and encompass new love along with your new life. You can have all three. And that's such an important lesson to convey. Listeners, if you take nothing else away today, please take that with you.
Carol, your book titled Loss is a Four-Letter Word, a Bereavement Bootcamp for the Widowed. Tell our listeners how to get a copy of this great book.
Available in all bookstores everywhere, and it's also available at all major book buying sites online.
Okay. Do you want them to go to your website?
Absolutely. Please visit us at widowswearstilettos.com. You don't have to be a widow. You can know a widow, or you can be somebody who's experienced a terrible loss and would just like some great tips and ideas on how to begin moving forward on your healing journey.
Great. Okay, now, I said we were going to come back to Lesson 6, Get Up, Get Moving, Get Out. And I've recently published a book, and the title is The Definitive Guide to Recognizing and Avoiding Romantic Relationship Scammers and Catfishers. And when you start to get out, one of the things that you do is tend to go to dating sites, get on the internet, and look around for something. And the reason for that, I think, or one of the reasons, is that loneliness is worse for your health than smoking or obesity. And loneliness is what I write about in some of my other books as addictive behaviors, and of course that's true. But how that relates is that when you're lonely and you feel that you've got to have somebody, you let your guard down, and you don't realize that there are people out there in the world who are professionals, and they're professionals at giving you a false sense of a relationship, a new love relationship, and all they want is your money. And so that's why I wrote this book, and you can get a copy, an e-book version of it for only 99 cents on my site, romanticscammers.com. And hopefully for those people who are going through the loss, the grief, and feeling the loneliness and wanting to do something about it, maybe the advice in this book will help them not lose financially, emotionally, spiritually, every other way, from someone that's out there in the world that's trying to wreck your life. And I just thought I'd get your comments about scammers on the internet.
Happy to chime in on that. That's a whole other show, Dr. Nguyen. Well, first of all, we don't want to completely demonize online dating as a whole, because there are advantages, there are positives, there are people who have done it successfully, myself included. I didn't meet my husband online, but we certainly utilized online because when I met him at the time, he lived in England. I live in California, bit of a distance. So the internet was an important tool for us. So there are advantages. The important thing is, yes, you're absolutely right. Loneliness is a huge, huge issue, especially in the widow community, because you have lost, among a lot of other things, the romantic love, the physical love, the feeling that there is somebody out there who loves you more than anything and whom you love more than anything. So that all coalesces to create loneliness. And when we're lonely, we're vulnerable. Those go hand in hand. And when we're vulnerable, we aren't always paying attention. And then, like you said, somebody comes along, and they're saying all the right things. They're saying all the things that you are so hungry to hear. what a lot of people don't realize is these scammers that you're referring to, Doctor, they have scripts. They have scripts in front of them. They know what to say. They are professionals, if you will. They are operating with a manual. And if you're not paying attention, and you need to pay attention, you can get really, really hurt. Dr. Nguyen and I have discussed this one anecdote before. There is a gal who is in When Bad Things Happen to Good Women. She was widowed. She went online just seeking friends, really, not even so much dating. And a few months later, she was got out $250,000, and the FBI said, "We can't help you." Can you imagine? Because she bought into all of the things that were being told to her. And then came the requests for money. And then came the excuses for not being able to meet in person. And then, well, I need some more money. And it's a horror, but it's going on. And it's a terrible thing. I work very hard to combat it. I educate, I teach in-person workshops on dating again after widowhood. And this is one of the things that we talk about. Are these horror stories, if you will, because they are.
Well, if the listeners today are in this situation and they're online, and they want not to lose their money, their physical health, their mental health, and everything. When you read my book, you will hear maybe up to 10 transcripts of what the scammers tried to do to me, word for word. And you'll be likely to hear some of those same things. And if you hear it, you know you're being scammed, and you don't want to spend another moment with this individual. It's really a horrible situation that you can get into because you're lonely.
Well, and I need to mention something. It is extraordinarily courageous to me that you have not only acknowledged the fact that you were scammed, but you have done it in a very public way, and that you've written a book about it. Everybody thinks that this is so easy. A, it's not. And B, one of the hallmarks of a scamming victim that scammers depend on is shame and embarrassment. Now, listeners, you're listening to a doctor. This is a highly educated man. And it happened to him. And he has the courage to say, you know what? I'm not letting shame shut me down. I'm not letting embarrassment erode my way. This thing happened to me, and I'm going to stop it from happening to anybody else if I have something to say about it. If this has happened to you, if it is happening to you, if you get Dr. Nguyen's book and you really need to, and you say, wow, I've heard that, or, yeah, this has happened, or, yeah, they've said they're in love with me, but I've never met them, and I've been talking to them for a year. There's nothing to be ashamed of. The shame is in silence. There is help out there. Get yourself the help. And nobody can, Dr. Nguyen cannot help you sooner. I can't help you sooner. But we can help you starting right now. So recognize yourself in the warnings and in the lessons that are provided when we were talking about safe online dating and what can happen to you if you're not paying attention at all times.
When I was researching this book, and it took me about 6 months, I actually went into Africa by telephone and email and paid these professional scammers to share with me what they did, how they did it, how they got your bank accounts, your credit cards, and all that kind of stuff. And you can read about how it's actually set up, and you wouldn't have any idea about the mechanics of what's going on without this information. So
I exactly.
just hope you go over to romanticscammers.com and check it out. Okay, so let's get back to Carol. Carol, you told us that they can get your book online with all the major distributors, or you can order it at your bookstore. The title is Loss is a Four-Letter Word, and you gave your website. Is there anything else that you would like to include in this interview that I possibly haven't gotten around to asking you about?
I really just want to encourage your listeners, because my goal has always been, for all these years, there's one person out there. Every day, there's one person who feels alone, who feels hopeless, powerless, helpless, and like life has come to an end. And to that one listener, I want to say there is hope. There is help. There is guidance. There is support. There is community. All you have to do is reach out. We'll grab your hand. We've got you. I am on Facebook at Carol Brody Fleet, also on Instagram at Carol Brody Fleet. And when you go to those two places, you will also meet thousands of other people just like you. No judgment, no negative opinions, just helping hands, hopeful hearts, and a path to your future. You don't have to do this alone.
Well, Carol, I really appreciate what you're doing with your life because there are so many people out there that need this kind of help specifically, and you're a great mentor to them and what you've written and what your workshops are and everything, and I just want to thank you for that.
Well, thank you, Dr. Wynn. It's my pleasure and my privilege, and I appreciate you giving a platform to those of us who want to bring messages of hope and healing to the community and what you're doing to keep all of us safe.
Well, thank you, Carol. So, that's the end. We'll see you next time.